our study of the origin of Satan. This session, we're going to talk about the word temptation and test. Let me ask you a question. Can God tempt you? If you think God can tempt you, raise your hand. Nobody, right? Okay, next question. Can God test you? If you believe, raise your hand. So everybody, right? So you guys understand clearly the word between tempt and test? Yes? You sure? Oh, okay. Then I need to tell you something. The word tempt and test is the same word. Different intention, good. What's so different about it? Can somebody tell me? What's so different about it? Different intention. How do you know different intention? Anyway. Huh? Tempt you is to lead you to sin. Okay, what else? Test is to refine you. Yeah, that's our what we were taught. That's correct too, but we need to go deeper. Because what did the Bible say that test is good for you? And then tempt you is bad for you. I mean, somebody in test, right? Some people fail God's test. Right? It can be. Not that every time God gave you a test, everybody passed it. Okay? So let's talk about the word. Test and tempt. God, we say basically see. This is see, right? God basically test, but don't tempt, right? We must base on Bible, okay, to see a difference. Let's first look at the word tempt and test. Let's look at James chapter 1. James chapter 1. If somebody have a computer, right, with those Greek words, right, you can use it too. We're going to talk about it. James chapter 1. James chapter 1. Verse 12. James chapter 1. Verse 12. Says, blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. Verse 14. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desire and enticed. Okay, here mention the word tempt, right? This word tempt, you can look at it in the dictionary computer. This word is same as test. Okay, so in Greek word, they all share the same word, tempt and test. Now, in verse 12, it says, blessed is the man who endure temptation, right? Or you want to say, who endure a test. Some versions say test. It's all right, too. In here, you cannot see test is good for you or temptation bad for you. Okay? In here, it can be basically same thing. Test or temptation. No matter what happened, we had to pass a test. We had to endure a test. Okay? So let's look at where does the Bible basis? Why, you know, in Bible, in Old Testament, there's many examples of God test people, right? For example, God tested Abraham. True, right? In fact, if you look at it throughout history of chosen people, so many tests. Okay? But you can say it's a temptation too. Okay. When we say Satan tempt, okay? In this context, this tempt, right? First is that we ourselves, when we use the tempt, but same way as test, okay? This tempt, we refer to it as that we have weakness. We have own desires, sinful desires. And we cannot say, oh, this is sinful desire, God tempting me. No, we cannot say that. But what do we mean by God tests us? Let's look at two passages. God does test us. Okay, we have to differentiate very clearly. Exodus chapter 16, verse 4. Exodus chapter 16, verse 4. Exodus chapter 16, verse 4. Verse 4. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not." Verse 5. "And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." Here, the Lord himself said, okay, that he will rain down the manna, and to see if these people will pick up accordingly. And then Saturday, they don't pick up any. By Friday, the sixth day, they pick up twice as much. God rained down to test them, to see if his people walk in his law. So God can do that. And same thing with Moses too. I mean, Moses, Abraham. God tests him to see if he will obey God. God can do that. Okay? Let's look at another verse, Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 2. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 2. "And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in wilderness to humble you and to test you to know what was in your heart, whether you will keep his commandments or not." Here God himself said again, I mean through the Bible, that God will test us. In fact, God tested the Israelites in wilderness for 40 years to see whether they would keep God's commandment or not, and also to know what was in their heart. So for these three reasons, God tests us. And this is what the Bible said. So whenever God tests people, we know that God had this three intention in his heart, to see if whether we'll obey his law or not. Okay? And also to see what's in our heart. But for Satan, when he's Satan tempts, in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 and 9, it tells us that Satan is like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. And what shall we do? 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 tells us, "Be sober and be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour." Verse 9. "Resist him steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same suffering experienced by your brotherhood in the world." Here it tells us, in order to overcome Satan's temptation, Satan is meant to devour when he tempts. But when God tests, well, it's the same word, remember, okay? God meant to see if we'll obey or not. If we don't obey, we'll be punished. If we obey, we'll be rewarded. Okay, is it clear? So in order to overcome such things, in verse 8 and 9, it tells us two things. One, would you be watchful? Be aware. Be alert. When temptation comes, like, for example, someone asks you questions, and those, just like A, B, C, those things. We have to be aware. Don't fall into the trap. And also, next one, verse 9, tells us that we have to resist him, steadfast in the faith. We have to know what we believe in, and don't be moved by it. Sometimes some people ask us some logical question, and sometimes we don't know how to answer. And sometimes we just start panic. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Oh, maybe my faith is something wrong. What people tell me, maybe it's wrong. We have to steadfast in our faith. We have to be deeply rooted so that we will not be led astray. So it's the same word, but we can see that God do test people, and Satan also tempt people but devour. Let's look at one more verse, 1 Corinthians chapter 10. This one tells us that God actually is in control of the temptation that we encounter. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We're going to look at these three verses and we're going to merge them all together. Okay? 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Please read it to yourself from verse 1 to verse 13. Please read to yourself. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1 to verse 13. Here, Paul was mentioning the history of the Israelites. Okay, the history of Israelites, what they encounter. All these things they encounter, right, is actually, in a way, it's God's test too. But many of them failed. They didn't make it. If we look carefully, verse 13. After Paul had finished talking about what these people went through, you know, the hardship and the temptation of women, the idols, verse 13, here Paul reassure these believers in Corinth. Say, no temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to men. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. Here clearly say that whenever temptation comes, it's something we can handle. It's not beyond our ability. If it's beyond our ability, then whenever that temptation comes, we've definitely failed, period. There's no chance whatsoever to overcome it. But what Bible says, God's faithful. God will not let us tempted or be tested, whatever you want to say, okay? Beyond our ability. Now, why do I mention these stuff, all these verses? All these verses actually have to do with Job, how Job was tested or how he was tempted. Let's turn to Job. For Job, in the beginning, we all heard about this, but if we read carefully, okay, first, start with God, that God was praising Job in front of Satan, right? And this is recorded in verse 8, chapter 1, Job chapter 1, verse 8. And then Satan was saying, does Job fear God for nothing? Does Job fear God for nothing? Verse 10. And then Satan said, oh, you know, you protect the hand, you bless him, okay? Verse 11, but if you stretch out your hand and touch him, touch all that he has, he will surely curse you. Okay, verse 12. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power. Do not lay a hand on his person. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. So God was praising Job in front of Satan, saying he's basically, in God's sight, he was the best man. In the whole world, he was number one righteous. But the thing is, Satan said, does he really love you? Does he really keep your commandments? Maybe not, or something. So in this case, God allowed it, right? God wanted to see if Job, we mentioned in Exodus chapter 16, verse 4, and Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 2, God can test people in a way that God wanted to see if they will obey his law or not. Follow his command, will love God more than anything else. So God allowed it, so it happened. But at the same time, what was Satan's motivation? Satan's motivation was hoping, if you look at later on what he did, right? He do it so extreme. He didn't have any mercy. God said, everything of Job is in your hand. He didn't spare any one of his kids or any of his properties. He totally wiped it out. And what he wanted to do so is to kind of give Job such a shock, such a strike, that he would just fell down and die, devoured by the lion, by Satan. And this is Satan's desire, to tempt, to deceive, and to kill. Okay. But in this, let's look at verse 12 carefully. Behold, all that is in your power, only do not lay a hand on his person. So here we can see that just where we have read in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1 to 13, that God was in control of the temptation. God said, okay, everything is in your hand, but you cannot touch him. So God do put a limit to Satan. Okay? So in this instance, we see God test people to see if the people obey his law or not. But at the same time, Satan tempt in order to try to hurt Job, to try to kill his faith. Okay? So when we interpret Job, basically, we are grasping these principles. Okay? We do not read Job our own imagination, saying, it was a battle between good and evil. Okay? Or to sell his power, try to see who's right or wrong. Bible didn't say that. Bible, from the passage we refer to, we can see that it all fit all these criteria, right? God put a limit. In fact, later on, Satan also say something bad about, basically say, put doubts about Job. God said, okay, you can basically do what you want, but you cannot take away his life. God put a limit to it. There's a limit, okay? And in fact, later on in Revelation chapter 2, verse 10, let's look at Revelation chapter 2, verse 10. Revelation chapter 2, verse 10. This is what the Lord said to the church. Chapter 2, verse 10. This is what the Lord said to the church in Smyrna, okay? Saying that they have persecutions. And verse 10 says, "Do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life." For here we can see the Lord knew there would be a, you call it, temptation or test coming up to these people, in the believers in Smyrna. God knows already, and God told him, you're going to have suffer. In fact, the Lord told him, you're going to, in fact, some of you will die. So basically, at this time, God has so believed that these believers have the ability to be still remain faithful and to overcome death, the physical death. So God simply let Satan say, Satan will throw some of you into prison and maybe even kill you. So that is a good news for us. Why? If we already proved that Satan is a fallen angel, okay? But suppose, okay, Satan is equal status, self-existent with God, okay? I tell you, when in temptations, number one, Satan does not have to abide to God's rule, okay? He can tempt us beyond our ability and we'll fall for sure. And none of us will be here today. So if Satan still existed, none of us would be stay here because he's too powerful. He doesn't have to be limited by God. And in fact, he doesn't even have tempest. He can just come and kill us because he's free. Okay? So this is to show that God, in a way, do test us to see if we will obey his law or not. In fact, in the Bible, there's so many examples God tests. But in the same time, it can be Satan tempt. Clear? Any questions before we go on to the applications? Okay. So 1 Corinthians chapter 10, basically verse 13, I just want to show you that God was actually in control of the temptation or test. Okay. The application, let's talk about application then. The application is that sometimes we human beings ask, you see, why does God have to put the tree of knowledge of good and evil in the Garden of Eden, right? Why does God have to put a snake in the Garden of Eden? Why? If there's no snake or no fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, then there will be no problem, right? So God has some little problem, right? If God didn't do that, then there will be no problem. But remember, okay, God gave a commandment. And we cannot say like that. If we say like that, we're just like Adam. What make you eat this fruit? Oh, it's my wife. And ask wife, Eve. Oh, it's a snake. What I'm trying to get at is, if Adam had obeyed God and truly believed what God said, it doesn't matter if there are 100 snakes every day and telling him, eat it, eat it, eat it. Okay, or other trees are the fruits, are the trees of knowledge of good evil, except one, tree of life. If he had believed it, it doesn't matter the circumstances. He was able to stand firm, and he would continue to obey God. So the key point is application. The first one is we had to take responsibility of our choice. Not to blame on God, the environment was bad, you know, this person said this to me, so therefore I was upset, and I say bad words back to them, okay? When God tells us to be gentle, it's not like everything had to be according to our way, then we can be gentle. But rather, when things become bad, but we can still have a gentle heart. Okay? So that's the key. Let's not blame on the trees or snake. What God has happened to me? Is it all right? Is it clear? Okay. So this is first thing. Then second, there will be certain things that we're not able to understand, okay, in our life. But we are just going to take it as it is and obey God. Let's turn to John chapter 14. John chapter 14. This is how God sees things and how we see things. John chapter 14, verse 19. John chapter 14, verse 21, application. The second one. John chapter 4, verse 21, onward to 23. John chapter 14, verse 21. Oh, sorry. John 14, verse 21. He who has my commandments and keeps them, it is he who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him. Verse 22. Judas, not Iscariot, said to him, Lord, how is it that you will manifest yourself to us and not to the world? Verse 23. Jesus answered and said to them, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. Here is something, a passage we often read. The Lord said, if anybody loves me, he will keep my commandments, right? Then this Judas, one of the disciples, not Iscariot, the one who betrayed him, he asked, Lord, why do you reveal to me? Why don't you reveal to the world, to other people? And then if you look at verse 23, did the Lord answer his questions? Did the Lord answer his questions? Yes, the Lord did. But if we look at the first sight, the Lord didn't. Because if we were to ask the Lord, Lord, why did you choose me and why not choose the world? Everybody. What kind of answer do we anticipate? It's going to be different, definitely different from verse 23. So if the Lord answered us in this way, then we probably feel like the Lord didn't answer us. But verse 23 tells us, for the context, verse 21 to 23, we can see how God look at things and how men look at things. When men look at things, right? These disciples were chosen. And they say, God, why don't you do this? Right? Why don't you choose these peoples in the world? Now, how can't you only reveal to us? So men try to understand what God is doing in the world, right? Just like we sometimes say, why God placed this tree of knowledge of good and evil in the Garden of Eden? Why God allowed the serpent in the Garden of Eden? Right? Sometimes ask like that. Why God do this? Why God do that? And why God do this then? Okay? But the Lord answered, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word. So how God look at things is that we are being created by God. We are supposed to obey God. If we obey God, then we love God. If we don't obey God, we don't love God. That's what God cares. But we, as human beings, like to hear, God, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you, say all kind of things. So the focus, the Lord did answer him to Judas. The focus is, you need to obey God. We need to obey God. Okay? That's the case I'm trying to make. So the time is running short. This is the God test, but God doesn't tempt. How to differentiate? It actually is the same word, but it's the motivation. God do test to see people if they obey his word or not. And if it doesn't, then be punished. So in Adam's case, he was tested by God. God knows about it. Okay? It was under his control, and Adam and Eve can overcome it, but they doubted. And this is to serve as a warning for us. Okay. That we need to stand firm in our faith. Okay. So two applications. Okay.
Let's go on to the D one because time is short. And the next one is, we always have this question. Why doesn't God just stomp on Satan and crush him and everything will be over, right? Some people ask, right? And since God cannot stomp on him, then Satan maybe is something powerful God cannot deal with. But we already talked about it. Satan was a fallen angel. God created everything. Okay. So next one we will talk about is why God don't destroy Satan. And the answer is God created all things for himself, or for his glory, whatever you say. Do you remember the verse we read in Colossians chapter 1, verse 16? Read it again. Let's turn to that. Colossians chapter 1, verse 16. Colossians chapter 1, verse 16. Colossians chapter 1, verse 16. Becky, can you read it?
16, for by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him.
For him, right? Bible said for him. Everything was created. Let me ask you a question. Is anybody like cockroach? Raise your hand. Nobody, right? Mice? No. You like mice? Okay, very good. Okay, why you like mice? Somebody, tell me.
Because my dad has a lot
of mice. Oh, why? Just like it some way? They're cute. Okay, very good. They're cute. Okay? But most of us got scared so much that they would jump on the table and scream for help. There are certain things in this world we can't understand why God let them survive and continue go on. For example, cockroach, mice, and scorpion, snakes. Okay? Right? Do you like to have mosquito bites? I don't think none of us like. Okay? Can not God just totally wipe it out right in the beginning? Right? Can God? I believe God can. But how come God let us still living and still by us? Huh? How about mice too? Right? God still let mice continue living. Can God not kill them? Yeah, I believe it. I totally believe God can kill them. But why?
Food for other animals.
So they do contribute in some way or the other, right? Okay? They do contribute some way or the other. And same thing with bacteria. None of us like bacteria, but imagine if this world had no bacteria, things would turn out quite differently, okay? It does play its functions, okay? So what I'm trying to say is, there's many things in this world we don't like, okay? But God sustained them. God still let them live. God did not stomp them out. God has his purpose. And we cannot say, because God did not destroy the way I wanted, at the time I wanted, therefore, he self-existed. It doesn't make any sense. Okay? So let's study why God let these things continue to be living, alive, stay around. Okay? Of course, I believe that God created the world. Everything was beautiful. But after people sinned, things should turn out bad. Because God said that the ground will produce what, thorns for you. So things are, there's opposition now. There is wrong in this world. So when things are wrong in this world, this is a result of the punishment. So the first thing is, it was because of people's sin. Corruption, things, opposition appear. Okay, a lot of things appear that was not mentioned. Okay, and let me ask you another question. When the Israelites sinned, right, when the Israelites, we all know the history, when the Joshua brought them to the land Canaan, when the Israelites sinned, who delivered them to the foreigners? Who? Who delivered Israelites, his own people, to the foreigners?
Moses.
God. It's God. You say God, right? Yeah, it's God. That's what Bible say too. Okay? But some people cannot take it. Let's look at it. Let's look at Judges chapter 2. Judges chapter 2. Judges chapter 2. Verse 13 to 16. Judges chapter 2, verse 13. Judges chapter 2, verse 13. They forsook the Lord and served Baal and Ashtoreth. Verse 14. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. Continue. So he delivered them into the hands of plunderers, who despoiled them and who sold them into the hands of the enemies all around, so that they could not no longer stand before their enemies. Verse 15. Wherever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for calamity, as the Lord has said, and as the Lord has sworn to them, and they were greatly distressed. Verse 16. Nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges who deliver them out of the hand of those who plunder them. Here, this is a general verse to describe the Israelites' history in Judges. In Judges' time, there's so many times people forsook the Lord and worship idols. And then, guess what? God provide a deliverer, a judge, to deliver them out of it. Now, what is the God that we worship? What kind of God we worship? The God that I worship, I know that if people disobey him, he will hand us to our enemies. Right? That's what the Bible said. The Israelites, their enemies are around. But when Israel disobey God, sin against God, God simply just hand them to their enemies. What do the enemies do to them? Make them suffer, right? And sell them around, break them apart. They're in great suffering. And then the thing is, it's only when they cry out to God, then what? God provides judges to save them, right? And this cycle went over, over, and over. God did not spare them. If they sin, God delivered them. But if they cry for help, God saved them. But you might ask, is this kind of dumb or stupid? Why God kind of send them out and then take them back? Why not just keep it? God is also just too. When people sin, okay, they have to be punished. God just send them out to be punished. Okay? And in John chapter 8, the thing is that in John chapter 8, let's look at John chapter 8. John chapter 8, verse 34. John chapter 8, verse 34. Start from verse 33. John chapter 8, verse 33. They answer him, "We are Abraham's descendants, and we have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will be made free?" Verse 34. Jesus answered them, "Most assuredly I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin." So since Adam committed sin and sin into the world and for all sin, we are a slave to sin. We are under sin. And we need a deliverer like a judge in the judge's time to save us from our trouble, save us from Satan's hand. So just like the nation at that time, there was an instrument of God to punish the Israelites. At the same time, that kind of punish is not like totally without mercy. They still have mercy. They still can cry out to God. It's not a lake of fire. Once you throw in, there's no hope. So right now, the Lord say to the Jews, okay, in fact, from the time of Adam until now, whoever committed sin, they are what? A slave of sin. And who can deliver us from the slave of sin? Through the whole world, there's only one, the Lord Jesus Christ. Not the judges. The judges is just a prefiguration to deliver them out of the physical suffering. But we need a Lord, a Savior, to save us out of the sin, pay the price for the sin, to redeem us. Okay? So this is just a mercy in this aspect. And this is the second reason why these things are, these bad people or nations or Satan are still around. Let's look at third reasons. We all heard about the 10 miracles, right? 10 signs that Moses performed. There's a couple interpretations. I heard one interpretation saying that God failed 9 times. God succeeded 10 times. You can look at it that way, you know what I'm talking about, if you know the passage well. Because God performed one miracle, he failed. He failed to sell his people out. Then he performed a second one. He performed third one, fourth one, fifth one, all the way to the ninth one, and then finally, 10th one. Right? Some people can describe that way and say God is not that powerful. But I believe it the other side. Okay? God's all powerful. In fact, God can smash Pharaoh right in the beginning. Okay? True? People believe that. Which one do you believe? The first one, God failed 9 times, succeeded 10th time, or God can smash Pharaoh right in the beginning. If you believe God can smash Pharaoh in the beginning, please raise your hand. Some people don't think so, huh? Okay. Some people don't even raise their hand. The thing is, if we look at Bible carefully, okay, we must have basis. Let's look at Exodus chapter 9, verse 13. Chapter 9, verse 13. Exodus chapter 9, verse 13. This is what God said. This is a section where Moses had performed 6 miracles, 6 signs. Before he performed the 7th one, God basically said something. Okay? Verse 13 said, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh, and say to him, "This says the Lord, God of Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me." Verse 14, "For at this time I will send all my plagues to you very hard, and on your servants and on your people, that you may know that that there is none like me in all the earth. Verse 15, "Now if I had stretched out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, then you would have been cut off from the earth. Verse 16, "But indeed for this purpose I have raised you up, that I may show my power in you, and that my name may be declared in all the earth. Verse 17, as yet you exalt yourself against my people, in that you will not let them go." Here, we can see, God didn't say this until after he performed 10, this is 6 signs. And why he performed all these 6 signs, now he say it. He should tell the Israelites. At this time, Israel is still suffering. It seems like God had failed 6 times, failed to save them out of it. It seems like, because every time miracle happened, Pharaoh just said, "Oh, okay, I'm still going to continue." Pharaoh's not giving up. But the people are suffering. But what God said to Pharaoh here, basically to show us, God has the power to wipe out Egypt. And once we wipe out Egypt, then these people can just go free. Right? Doesn't even have to perform miracles. Save time, right? But God does not think the way we do. We do not think like a God, because God's way is higher. In verse 16, God clearly said why he continued to let Pharaoh live. "But indeed, for this purpose, I have raised you up, that I may show my power in you, and that my name may be declared in all the earth." This is what God said to Pharaoh. Okay, even though it seems like he failed 6 times, but God did not fail at all. God was to show his power. And this is actually a prefiguration of the society right now. This world is like Egypt. The Bible says always this world is like Egypt. And Satan is like the Pharaoh. And because some people, in the past, we were slaves of sin, belonged to him. He doesn't want to let us go. Okay? It's not God's incapable of destroying Satan. Okay? So from the story, and also from the Colossians chapter 1, verse 16, we can see these 3 examples is all for him, for God. Everything was created by God, through God, and for God. And the first reason we quote is Colossians chapter 1, verse 16. And the second example we show is that in Judges' time, God's mercy and just punish people, but he wanted to save. Okay? And basically, when we sin, we are put in spirit, we are put in prison. Do you know that? We are put in prison, just like Satan. When he sinned, he was chained and put in prison. So are we. When we sin, we are put in prison. And this is recorded in 1 Peter. Let's look at 1 Peter. 1 Peter
First Peter chapter 2 Peter, sorry, that should be 2 Peter, chapter 2. Wait, 1 Peter chapter 2. Can you help me look for the Noah? Chapter 3, right? Chapter 3? 1 Peter chapter 3? Okay, thank you. Right, sorry. 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 19. Verse 19. By whom also he went and preached to the spirits in prison. Verse 20. Who formerly were disobedient, when once the divine longsuffering waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is, eight souls, were saved through waters. Here, it says that preach to the spirits in prison. The spirits in prison, but it's not saying that the Lord, after he died, he would go to the Hades and preach to them. No. Was referring to that through the Holy Spirit, actually, the message of salvation was preached to the times of Noah before God destroyed them. And in this passage, the people in the times of Noah were being described as spirits in prison. They were in prison. So when Satan sinned, or a fallen angel, when they sinned, they were being thrown into darkness and were chained, okay, were in prison. And if you look at Revelation chapter 20, verse 8, Satan came out of his prison and deceived the nation. That prison is the same word as a prison here, prison of spirits. So when people sin, we are all put together, okay? And Satan is the so-called ruler or the prince of this world, okay? So we have talked about God created all things for him. So what we need to do right now is to believe in God fully. And submit to him. There is no other beings that's coexisted with God or before God. Okay? Bible say to us very clearly, everything was for him. Everything was created by him. And God let these certain things that we consider bad continue to live. And how can we avoid these things? For example, if you don't like cockroach, right? What do? You keep your house clean, right? You don't open the door and leave it open, right? This is what we had to do. If we don't like Satan to bother us, okay, live a holy life. Obey God. We'll be free from it. But if we leave a door open, our heart open to temptations and to sin, then cockroach will come in. Okay? So in the end, let me summarize what we have studied. We have talked about, first, that the names and the work of Satan. And the second, we had talked about the origin of Satan. The origin of Satan, we talk about 4 points. First point is the church's stance, position on this issue. And the second is that we had talked about that Satan is a fallen angel and God created all things. And the third we have mentioned is that God tests us, but God does not tempt us. And the fourth is that God created all things for his glory. And so while at this time, maybe we are like in Egypt, you know, God performed the fifth miracle or sixth miracle, but I said, wonder, God, how long? How long do we have to wait until you stump out the Pharaoh out? You know, deliver us completely, free from it. We just had to keep waiting until God performed the 10th miracles, the second coming of Jesus Christ. And while at this time, we cannot criticize God, okay? And this is one thing I want to talk about is the consequences of having, saying such thing as, oh, since God cannot create evil, since God cannot create Satan is self-existent, or God cannot snuff it out, you know, kill, destroy Satan, therefore he's self-existent. Saying such thing is very insulting to God.
I don't know if you realize it. Okay? Bible says to us clearly, God is the creator of all things. Everything was through him, by him, for him. And now we say, no, God does not create all things. Something self-existed, it's as powerful as God, or something like that. And then God's not all that powerful. We are insulting God. Okay? We do not believe what the Bible said. We are insulting God. It's just somebody say to us, no, you're not that good, you know. Somebody else is better than you. Okay? But actually you are number one. But people say you're not that good. How will you feel? You feel upset. You feel angry. And this is the concept we have. We say God's almighty, right? God said he's almighty. Correct? Now, we also God said God's just and mercy, right? Now, in this world, we see a lot of injustice and no mercy, right? Is God still just in heaven? Yes, God's still just in heaven. Okay? Even though we see injustice, we can't understand why this thing happened. I can tell you, God does not change. In fact, I will tell you, according to human understanding, if some people do wrong today, God already made decision of that person already, how to reward him or punish him according to what he did. So maybe we don't see it, but I want to tell you that God already made his decision up in heaven. And Bible tells us that everything that we do will be rewarded, whether it's good or whether it's bad. So God is just, even though we see things contrary to what God said. This is called faith. Same thing, power. God is not eventually powerful. God is not eventually just and mercy. Do you understand? Because we don't see, so we see, oh, eventually God's just mercy. No, we cannot say that. God doesn't have to prove himself he's eventually just or mercy. God's already just and mercy. Same thing with his power. God is already powerful, is almighty. But we cannot say, well, since God did not do the way I wanted, the time I wanted, therefore God is not almighty. But eventually, he will be almighty. This is insulting to God. Just like you had to show me to prove that you're worthwhile. God doesn't have to do that. God already is. God will never change. Okay? So, I have a couple minutes. Why don't we open for discussion? Any other questions? Any questions? Yes. That I did not research what the Jews believe, but I know Jews believe one true God, so I don't think they consider Satan as a god. What so-called one true God as mean only one God, the most powerful? Okay. Any other questions, Eric? Sorry, I got to finish what I said before I ask questions. Maybe cover your questions too. Any other questions? Last one. Since there are no questions, I want to give you a passage. Turn to Revelation, chapter 2. Revelation, chapter 2. Revelation, chapter 2. Verse 24. This is a letter written by John by the command of the Lord to the church in Thyatira. And Thyatira has a couple problems, but verse 24 is one of them. Now to you I say, and to the rest in Thyatira, as many as do not have this doctrine, who have not known the death of Satan, as they say, I will put on you no other burden. Okay? Here mentioning that in the time of apostolic church, there is a certain doctrine. It's called, people call it, the death of Satan. What is death of Satan? Will anybody think about it? What is the death of Satan that was talking about? Okay. Of course, Bible, everything is based on Bible. Bible did not tell us exactly what was the death of Satan, the doctrine of death of Satan consists of. Okay. But it was something that God didn't quite like it. Right? Okay, and if some people don't have such doctrine, the Lord will not lay any burden on them. Okay, just keep what they have until the Lord comes. And this death of Satan, it's not talking about origin of Satan. Okay? But it's actually, we know one principle. Anything that's outside the Bible, that's not biblical, we cannot believe. Especially, let's say, Bible all talk about the depth of Satan. We do not believe anything outside what's Bible recorded. Some people may say Satan is so and so and so and so. But if I cannot find in the Bible, I will not believe it. Because that would be belittle God and exalt Satan. Okay? And that would be offense. And if we do that, Bible tells us that God will give us authority, and God will also give us morning star. The iron rod represents authority. The morning star represents Lord Jesus Christ himself. Jesus Christ said that he's the morning star. Okay? So in other words, concerning truth, we'll be able to understand in depth, know more about the Lord. Okay? So, in conclusion, this Bible is not talking about good and evil, God and Satan opposing each other, fighting. No. This Bible is telling us what choice do we want to make. Obeying God, hold fast to God's word, or listen to Satan's heresies or Satan's words and be corrupted. This is a very important focus. If we didn't catch the main focus of the Bible, if we consider this Bible as some kind of battle, oh, interesting, God fighting with Satan, oh, okay. No, it's not. It's about us. God wrote this Bible for us so that we can be saved and fight the true battle. Okay? So God is the only one who existed, self-existed, and by through relying on him, we have confidence we will receive salvation. Okay. If not, let's bow our heads, pray in silence to conclude.